from Laughs Up the Song. You're listening to CJLO 1690 AM in Montreal.
Hello, you're listening to CJLO News. New noise bylaws are coming to the Plateau Mont-Royal and Ville-Marie boroughs of Montreal, areas known for their nightlife and live music cultures. These bylaws seek to clear up confusion around noise complaints in the area, but critics say they hand too much discretion and power to police. In the last 2 years, multiple iconic small music venues in the Plateau area of Montreal have been closed, and these venues cited noise complaints as the principal reason for their closure. Venues like La Tulipe and Diving Bell are among these bars, and just last week, Blue Dog announced it would be closing its doors for similar reasons. Earlier this month, the city committed to introducing clearer guidelines around what counts as excessive noise, setting clear decibel limits for bars in certain areas. However, these new bylaws also increase the minimum fines for noise violations by 566%. Here is Turbo House owner and co-owner of the recently shuttered Blue Dog, Sergio Da Silva, discussing the fee increase.
A $10,000 fine on any small business or any small bar or venue is basically a death sentence. And then you couple that with sort of like their lip service to sort of doing what other people have asked, like the decibel limits. Basically, that should be put in place so businesses know how to conform to the rules. Whereas now, if you leave everything at the discretion of the police, that rule basically has no teeth and is more of an instrument for the police to, come down harder on the businesses than it is for the business to be able to conform with the rules that are on the books.
These bylaws also leave Montreal's police force, the SPVM, with the power to shut down live music shows or clear out bars at their discretion. However, the city has also established what they are calling nightlife vitality zones to partially subsidize smaller venues and help pay for soundproofing and noise equipment. Max Honigan is the communications officer for Montreal 2424, a nightlife research and advocacy group in Montreal. He has a background in policy analysis. Honigan says while some of the city's support for live venues is appreciated, the enforcement of the new bylaws will threaten the distinct live music culture of Montreal.
And there's nothing to protect from noise. It's just about, extended hours to serve alcohol, which is great, which we're in favor of, and funding for soundproofing, which is also nice. But nothing is solving what's the real issue here, which is venues which have existed for years, sometimes for decades, that are just trying to exist, just trying to do what they do, which is put on shows. People move in nearby, knowing full well where they're moving into, and then start legally harassing the venue for just doing what they're supposed to be doing. That's the real issue here.
For the Local Journalism Initiative, I'm Adam Innes.
Shift, conquer, and it's alive. There's something Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Tommy John Show here on CJLO 1690 AM in Montreal. Hope everyone's doing well. Man, it's a hot one today. It's a very hot day, humid day here in downtown Montreal. Hope everyone's doing well. We got a jam-packed show for you guys today. NFL training camp is here. We have waited long enough, ladies and gentlemen. It's been a long spring and summer now. Since February, and we're finally here. NFL teams are reported to camp. We have storylines. We'll break them down. We'll get into that. College football less than a month away. And if you looked at those games on August the 30th, oh my, oh my. Texas and Ohio State, LSU and Clemson, Florida State plays Alabama. It's all these huge clashes on the opening weekend of college football. So we'll talk a bit about what to expect this year. Arch Manning starting for the Longhorns. Is Clemson the real deal? And is someone else going to step up in the Big Ten to challenge Ohio State and Penn State? We'll get into that. And we got some tennis in the city. We have the National Bank Open, the women in Montreal, the men in Toronto. That starts this week. And Canadian Layla Ann Fernandez is coming off a win at the City Open. So you have, at least on two sides, for the men and the women, Canadian players playing well. Shapovalov winning his last tournament. Now Layla Ann Fernandez winning her... She's won before. I think it's her second or third win, but her first win in almost 2 years. So she's in great form heading into the National Bank Open in her hometown in Montreal. We'll get into that. And Formula One, man, what a weird race that was with Oscar Piastri winning the Belgian Grand Prix, followed by Norris and Leclerc. So we'll get into that as well. It's a jam-packed show, and we also have to mention those red-hot Toronto Blue Jays who are setting the country on fire. They took 3 out of 4 against Detroit over the weekend. Now the schedule finally opens up. There's just plenty of opportunities now to open that gap up against the Yankees, against the Red Sox, against the Rays. Because if you look at that schedule, my God, it's Baltimore, it's Colorado, it's the Kansas City Royals. It's a lot of teams that if the Blue Jays just continue to do what they're doing, they should have no problem. But you never want to overlook anyone. I remember a few weeks ago they lost a series in, it's not Oakland, I guess Sacramento, whoever you want to call them. They lost that series to the A's. And that's really been the only blip in this unreal run they've had for the last 2 months. The Blue Jays are the best team in Major League Baseball, and we will get into that later on in the program. So why don't we start off just quickly recapping Major League Baseball standings. And yes, the Toronto Blue Jays have a 5.5. Yes, now a 5.5 game lead over the New York Yankees, a 6.5 game lead over the Boston Red Sox, a 10 game lead over the Tampa Bay Rays, who sit exactly at 500 at 53-53. Then you have the Baltimore Orioles, who are, good God, 47-58, 15.5 games back. And they have a big series with the Blue Jays coming up this week, so can't wait to watch that one. But if you're the Blue Jays, you're in a great spot. You wonder if the All-Star game was going to affect the momentum at all. You're playing great teams coming out of the break. It's San Francisco. It's the Yankees. It's the Tigers. And you sweep the Giants. You win a series against the Yankees, 2 out of 3. And then you take 3 out of 4 against the Detroit Tigers. I mean, what a way to start off the second half of the year post the All-Star break. And then, now like we mentioned, Baltimore for 4 games, Kansas City, Colorado. Like, this is set up beautifully. And yes, down the road, you do have those series in LA against the Dodgers, then at home against the Cubs, okay. But then after that, it's Pirates, it's Marlins, it's Baltimore again, Tampa Bay. So it's not an impossible schedule down the stretch. If they can overcome the schedule they had to start this second half of the year post the All-Star break with San Francisco, with the Yankees, with the Detroit Tigers, you can handle anything. And now looking up on that schedule, Colorado is one of the worst teams of all time. They lost, I think, 18-0 or 17-0 on Saturday to the Orioles. Yeah, 18-0 they lost. And they're a horrendous baseball team. They are truly awful. They're 27-78 That's a .257 win percentage. They're one of the worst baseball teams of all time. Kansas City's really having a disappointing year after what they did last year with Bobby Witt. Oh, could have won the MVP, but if it wasn't for Aaron Judge last year, he was sensational, and the Royals snuck into the playoffs, had a decent run there. They're just not the same team this year. They're under .500. And then the Orioles are maybe the biggest disappointment in all baseball. They had playoff aspirations, World Series aspirations. Considering what they've done the last few years, it's for them to be 47-58 in last place at the end of July is crazy. You know, this is a team that won 100 games 2 years ago. This is a team that, what, I think they won 91 or 92 games last year, made the postseason. So for them to be in that spot in basically August, we're the 28th of July. So for them basically to be in August with the worst record in the American League East is not a good year by any means for the Orioles. They're not playing well. 4-6 in their last 10. This is a golden opportunity for the Blue Jays to really put some separation between them. And not just the rest of the American League East, but the rest of the American League. They have a better record than the Tigers. They have a far better record than the Houston Astros. And if you look at the Astros schedule coming up, yes, they do play Washington this week, but they have the Yankees, they have two series with the Red Sox, they have to play the Tigers again, then they play the Yankees. Texas has their number. It's not an easy stretch of baseball coming up for the Houston Astros. And if you look at it for the Detroit Tigers, who are 2-8 in their last 10, they got Arizona, they have the Phillies. They still have a big series with Houston coming up, like we mentioned. They have the Mets, the Yankees. They have a two series against the Marlins, I believe. But outside of that, it's not an easy schedule at all for the Detroit Tigers, who can't really get any good pitching right now if it's not Skubal. So the Tigers are not the team they were a few months ago. And it's just the ebbs and flows of a Major League Baseball season. It's 162 games. Some teams get off to crazy starts, cool down. We've seen teams like the Nationals, when they won the World Series, were off to a brutal start, completely flipped the switch post the All-Star break. But we got the trade deadline the end of this week. So look for teams like Toronto. New York's already getting out there, making some moves, acquired Naylor from the Diamondbacks. Believe they acquired a few other bats as well. Then the Red Sox are trying to get in on some pitching. And obviously the Blue Jays, if they're smart, you got to go in and get some relief pitching. Or maybe if they can go and get another starter, that'd be ideal. But you can roll with Berrios. You can roll with Kevin Gausman. You can roll with Chris Bassett. And let's see if this Lauer kid can still pitch, because he's been off to a sensational start. But the real question is, can he keep this going through October and possibly into November if the World Series goes that long, if the Blue Jays get there? Max Scherzer's a question mark. He's going to the Hall of Fame. He's one of the great pitchers of this generation, but he's probably the weak link as of right now, and understandable. He's in his 40s. He's still coming off that thumb, that weird injury earlier in the year, which had to miss a boatload of time. So they look for the Blue Jays to address some starting pitching and relief pitching as well. Hoffman's a good closer. They have decent arms in the bullpen, but nothing close to what you need to win a world championship. Because we all know, no matter what your record is in Major League Baseball through 162 games, once you get to the postseason, you need to have arms. You need to have elite pitching, not just starting pitching. You need great bullpen pitchers as well. And all the great teams recently, you go through the champs, look at Houston's pitching, look at the Red Sox pitching when they won in 2018 and in the early 2000s, look at the San Francisco Giants when they won all those World Series, the Cubs that 1 year, even the Dodgers. I know they had some injuries last year, but their bullpen play was outstanding. You need good pitching come postseason play. And they got three great starters. Lauer's been fantastic, but he's kind of an unknown, and an older veteran like Scherzer. To me, you got to just go and acquire arms of your Toronto Blue Jays. You've got the bats. Vladdy's finally hitting for average. Bichette's been hitting better. This Barger kid's been fantastic. And, oh my God, Lor Pafito, he's been fantastic. They've got the hitting. Springer's cooled down a bit since that unbelievable run he had earlier in the month. But they brought up Roden again. Clement can hit. The bats aren't the issue right now for the Toronto Blue Jays, and nothing's really the issue. They're playing so well. But in October and in possibly November, if the World Series goes that long, you need pitching. That's what you need. They got a closer. They got three great starters. Let's add to that starting rotation, and let's add some arms in the bullpen. That would be the number one thing for the Toronto Blue Jays. That's the number one thing they got to do. And if you watch the news or watching anything that's going on around Canada and Montreal, the ratings have been through the roof for the Blue Jays. Bars are packed in Toronto, all over the city, just trying to watch Blue Jays games, fans getting there a couple hours early, enjoying the festivities. It's a great time to be a Toronto Blue Jays fan. And can you believe this team a year ago, with way higher expectations, finished last in the American League East and only won 74 games? 74. They're well on their way to do that this year. They're already at 63 wins and have the best record in all of Major League Baseball. So an incredible story. And the Blue Jays have their next series starting tonight at 6:30 against the Baltimore Orioles, and then play a doubleheader on Tuesday. So tomorrow they have a 12:30 start and then a 6:30 start again in Baltimore to wrap up the series. They do play at noon on Wednesday. So four games in 3 days for the Jays, and then they get a day off and they go back home to Toronto to host the Kansas City Royals. So we'll quickly go to the National League, and the New York Mets are on a bit of a heater right now. They've opened up a 1.5-game lead over the Philadelphia Phillies. They got a huge home run from Juan Soto yesterday. They almost let that game slip in the ninth inning, but Diaz recovered. They got out of it. They win 5-3 over the Giants and have swept the San Francisco Giants over the weekend in San Francisco. The Mets are really turning it on right now. They've won, I believe, 7 in a row. So the Mets are on a good tear right now and have a 1.5-game lead over the Phillies. The Miami Marlins are the next closest team in that division, 11 games back. So it's the Mets and the Phillies, and there's everyone else in the National League East. The Cubs and the Brewers are just going toe-to-toe right now in the National League Central. They are both 62 and 43, just dominant runs by both clubs. The Cubs now, listen to this, are in the road in Milwaukee tonight. On the road in Milwaukee to face the Brewers. And they play the Brewers a lot coming up. They're in Milwaukee with the biggest series of the year up to this point. Starts this week. They're in Milwaukee. And then later in August, they are at home against the Brewers for 5. So they got 8 games in the next 3 weeks against the Milwaukee Brewers, and that's going to play a huge factor in who wins the National League Central. They're both going to make the playoffs. They're both going to be threats to win the World Series, but getting that bye as the one seed in the National League, or top two seed in the National League, and getting that home games would be huge for either one of those teams. So big series in Milwaukee tonight between the Cubbies and the Brewers. The Reds not out of it by any means. They're 6.5 back. They're well in that wild card race, which is heating up. Then the St. Louis Cardinals are still over 500 as well, 54 and 53, 9 games back of both Milwaukee and Chicago. Despite the Dodgers not playing their best, they still have a 4-game lead in the National League West over the San Diego Padres. The San Francisco Giants not heading in the right direction at all post the All-Star break. They're 2-8 in their last 10 and are 7 games back. And that really hurts San Francisco, because the Dodgers have stumbled a bit in the last few weeks and they have not been able to make up any ground. Got swept by the Blue Jays, just swept that home by the Mets over the weekend. This was a disappointing stretch for the San Francisco Giants, who could have easily made a run to close that gap between them and the Dodgers in the National League West. So we'll quickly take a look at the wild card standings. So like we mentioned, we have Toronto leading the American League East, the Tigers leading the Central, the Astros leading the West, and those are the top three AL leaders. The wild card teams as of right now, you have the Yankees, the Red Sox, and then you have Seattle and Texas tied for that last wild card spot. Texas is playing much better as of late, have won 6 in a row and are a true threat come October. They won the World Series 2 years ago, had a down year last year, and they have really picked it up over the last few weeks. The Tampa Bay Rays only three games back, 3.5 for the Cleveland Guardians of the final wildcard spot. Quick at the National League, we mentioned the Cubs and the Brewers tied atop the Central. The Mets leading the East, the Dodgers leading the West. So you have Milwaukee and Chicago. They're tied at the top of the wild card. The Phillies comfortably in that second spot. The San Diego Padres hold on to the last wild card spot, a game up on the Cincinnati Reds, three games up on the Giants, 3.5 up on the Cardinals. So there's your quick little baseball recap for this afternoon. A big week for the takeaways, huge week coming up for the Blue Jays. Got to take advantage of these bad teams and watch out for teams at the trade deadline. It's going to be just a hectic few days. Jeff Passan, the insider, his Twitter is going to be blowing up. It's going to be a crazy, crazy, crazy next few days for the trade deadline. Look for Toronto. Look for Detroit. Look for those teams to do some damage. Quickly over the Formula One, Max Verstappen breaking news to remain with Red Bull in 2026. There was huge reports earlier in the year that he was going to leave and join Mercedes. As of right now, it looks like he will be staying with Red Bull for 2026. And just like we quickly mentioned, Oscar Piastri leading the way in the drivers. He had a fantastic race over the weekend. He'd won in Belgium. His teammate Lando Norris finished second. Charles Leclerc in third. Max Verstappen fourth. George Russell fifth. So that's your top five quickly in Formula One from the Belgian Grand Prix this weekend. National Bank Open. So it starts this week, and I cannot wait. We have a big match tonight on center court. Eugenie Bouchard and what could be her final tennis match of her career. This is our last tournament at home in Montreal. That will take place tonight around 7 p.m. on center court. She'll be taking on the Colombian Emiliana Arango. So I'll be watching that big match for Eugenie Bouchard. We also have another Canadian in action tonight. Carson Brandstein should be playing on center court following the Bouchard match against Maria Sakkari of Greece. The real big matches start tomorrow. We'll have Leila Fernandez in action. We'll have the American Emma Navarro in action. Iga Swiatek, the Wimbledon champion, she'll be playing. We have Elena Svitolina playing tomorrow. Jessica Pellini, Coco Gauff. It's the Andreeva will be playing Andreescu in the round of 16. That's going to be a primetime match tomorrow. So the National Bank Open on the women's side, far deeper field than the men. I feel bad for Toronto tennis, and the men's side has a lot of juice following the French Open and Wimbledon. But Alcaraz, like we mentioned, not going. Sinner not going. Djokovic, Draper. So the number one seed is Alex Zverev. And you still have some very good players. You have Musetti going, Taylor Fritz, Francis Tiafoe, the two Canadians, Ogier Aliassim and Shapovalov, Holger Rune, Ben Shelton. You still have very good players playing, but not having the top four players in the world it's kind of a huge loss for the tournament itself. But I'll be watching both men and the women. And honestly, I hate to say it, with Alcaraz and Sinner and Djokovic gone, and Jack Draper opens the door up for a lot of people. Like Shapovalov's playing great tennis at the minute on hard court. Can he make a run now because those guys aren't there? And can that help his ranking going into going into Cincinnati and into the U.S. Open, the year's final major? So a lot of juice in tennis right now, and it's in Canada. It's a woman here in Montreal, the men in Toronto. The final will be this Sunday, so a week from yesterday. 6 days from now, we'll have the final of the National Bank Open. So cannot wait for that. We're going to take our first break, and when we come back, we have to talk about the NFL. It is finally here. We waited long enough. We have huge storylines from training camp. We have just crazy news from college football, which we'll get into. It's going to be a heavy football second part of the show, so we will get into all of it here on the Tommy John Show. Back after this quick word from our sponsors. Do not go away.
It's the sound of the Fantasia International Film Festival, back for another year on the downtown campus of Concordia University from July 16th to August 3rd. North America's premier genre film festival is your place to see the most eye-poppingly, face-meltingly extraordinary films from around the world. For more information on movies, tickets, and showtimes, check out FantasiaFestival.com. And be sure to listen to CJLO and check out CJLO.com for your chance to win tickets. This is all brought to you by CJLO 1690 AM and the fine folks at
Fantasia.
Tune in to Fukubukuro on Saturdays at 8 p.m. for your weekly grab bag of music from Japan, East Asia, and everywhere else. Only on CJLO 1690 AM.
Here on the Tommy John Show. So it is finally here. The NFL training camp, it's back. It feels surreal because after the Super Bowl's done, we had other things to get into. There was the Four Nations right after, which was unbelievable. Then the push for the playoffs. The Canadians were in it. They make the postseason. Then you have the hockey postseason, which is unbelievable, and the NBA. You have the Masters, you have March Madness, you have a lot of distractions, but once you get to June, nothing against Major League Baseball, I love baseball, but there's something missing. You need something that really gets you going. Baseball, it's on every day, the season, like, it's June, so you're into your team, you hope they win, but like, there's so many games left, the playoffs are in 4 months. It's hard to really, really get into. But football, as soon as training camp, it's go time. Not baseball. Spring training, you get a little bit into. You get into opening weekend. You want to get into a good start. And then once you get to June, July, it's like, okay, just tread water, play some good baseball, but peak for later in the year. And later in the year, 3 months later on for the playoffs, it's a lot to get into. So it's very, I get why people aren't as into baseball as other sports in the summer. It's a lot of games every day. Okay, fair enough. We just wait for the NFL. The NFL, it just, everyone's into it. It's hard to describe. It's the great, and you can ask anyone. It's the greatest sport to follow. It's one game a week. It's the best. It's the best. Look at the ratings. Look at everything. It's the best sport by a mile to follow. And it's finally here. It is finally here. So we'll get in. I don't want to get into the storylines of all these contracts because I feel like we've done that enough. You know, the Bengals kid signed Shamar Stewart. Okay, great. But Hutchinson and McLaurin and Micah Parsons, who cares? They're going to play. It's irrelevant right now. I don't get Terry McLaurin. Oh, he's going to hold out. He's at practice the other day. They're going to get it sorted out. You watch these shows like First Take or Colin Cowherd or all these other people. It's spend their whole show on it, and then they sign 2 weeks later. It was the same with CeeDee Lamb. It was the same with Dak Prescott. It was the same with Bosa. It was the same with all Brandon Ayuk. It's the same every single year. It's the same storylines, same everything. Oh, he's going to hold out, then they're going to trade. No nonsense. They're going to wait till the last minute. And then he realizes, well, if I don't play a minimum of 9 games, it doesn't count. I'm still under contract. So What am I doing? Why am I going to sit out the year? I'm going to play and then become a UFA. And then naturally, once you start playing and once you report to camp, usually a deal between the agent and the team gets done. So I expect Hutchinson to get a deal. I more than expect Terry McLaurin to get a deal. And if it comes to Micah Parsons, that one's a bit more trickier, but Jerry Jones, he always caves. He gave CeeDee Lamb a fortune. He gave Dak the most money any quarterback's ever gotten. He's going to pay Micah Parsons. He can't be that dumb to realize, you know what, I'm not going to pay my star pass rusher who's been the best player on my team for the last 3 years. I don't think Jerry Jones is going to draw the line there. I could be wrong, but he's going to sign Micah Parsons as well. This is all going to happen. At first, when I was younger, I used to buy into everything. Oh my God, he's not reporting to camp. He's going to get traded. What's going to happen? Oh my God. And the only time it's really happened where someone got dealt is earlier in the year with Tyreek Hill, or earlier in the year with DK Metcalf. That didn't happen in training camp. It did not. When the Chiefs were done with Tyreek Hill and they knew his too far apart on the deal, traded him before the draft to get the assets. DK Metcalf, same deal. Dealt. It looked like he wasn't going to sign an extension. They were too far apart. Get out of here. We're trading you to Pittsburgh. Usually those big deals happen around free agency in March, right before the draft in April. That's when those deals happen. Now we're in training camp. The first preseason games are 2 weeks away. We don't see huge mega deals like that. And I could be wrong. It'd be hilarious if there's breaking news right now where McLaurin gets dealt or Micah Parsons. But I don't see that happening. You telling me the Commanders aren't going to take care of Terry McLaurin? You finally have a star quarterback. You invested in the offensive line. The window that you thought would be open in 2 years opened way earlier based on last year. They went to the NFC Championship game with him as a rookie. And then you're just not going to sign his best weapon? The receiver that Cliff Kingsbury's whole system's built upon, you're just not going to sign him? I find that hard to believe. And you think Terry McLaurin just wants to leave Jaden Daniels? He's been playing with absolute horrific quarterbacks in Washington for all his career. And he's just going to get up and leave now after 1 year of Jaden Daniels? I don't see that happening. To me, Terry McLaurin is for sure going to sign. That's going to happen. The Hutchinson one's a bit more complicated because the Bengals in the past have proven to be stingy, don't love to pay for their players. But they paid for Joe Burrow. They paid for T. Higgins. They gave a fortune to Jamar Chase, as they should have. They just locked up the rookie from Texas A&M. He was on the practice field yesterday. He's the next one. And I feel like they're going to take care of Hutchinson. Whether it's a shorter deal, higher AAV, like we saw with T.J. Watt, or if it's a long-term deal, I believe they get it done. Now, is it best for their team long-term? Who knows? But I'd be stunned if Hutchinson gets dealt. I'd be on the floor if Terry McLaurin got dealt. I don't understand that at all. They don't have another receiver that is anywhere close to him. And they want to challenge Philadelphia. They want to make a run in the postseason again. And you're just going to trade Terry McLaurin and stunt Jane Daniels' development in his second year? It just makes zero sense whatsoever. So I'm done listening to the first take saying, oh, he might get traded. When's this deal going to get done? It's going to get done. They all get done. Whether you're CeeDee Lamb, whether you're Joey Bosa or Nick Bosa, whether you're Terry McLaurin in this instance, all these deals are going to get done. They're too good of players not to, and they're too valuable to their teams. Now, if Terry McLaurin was playing on the Browns, or he's playing on the Colts, or if he's playing on one of those teams, okay, I'd be a bit more concerned. But he's finally on a winning team. He finally has a great quarterback. Why would he leave now? To get a few extra bucks? I'm a Patriots fan. What, New England's linked to him? He's going to go to New England? Where else is he going to go? Seriously. Unless he goes to Kansas City or Buffalo, or maybe they ain't going to trade him to Philly, maybe Baltimore, where else is he going to go that has that good quarterback play? Seriously. I don't buy the Terry McLaurin thing at all. I don't. So I'm tired of reading all these extensions happen, is all I'm trying to say. Every single year we do the same thing. Team player Brandon Ayuk last year, he was pretty much dealt to New England and to Pittsburgh. No, I want to sign here. I want to stay here. okay, then sign. It happens every single year. They will be there for week one on, what is, September the 8th or whatever it is, September the 6th, that week, Terry McLaurin will be in a Commander's uniform. Hey, I believe Hendrickson will be in a Bengals uniform. I totally believe, without a shadow of a doubt, Micah Parsons will get a deal done, and he'll be playing for the Cowboys in week one. It's going to happen. I've been calling him Hutchinson the whole time. Trey Hendrickson. That deal will get done. I'm not concerned. Now, the one thing that really has me annoyed, is everyone, and I don't understand it, getting on the Minnesota Vikings. So the Minnesota Vikings last year with Sam Darnold went 14-3, and yes, he was horrendous the last game against the Lions and that wild card round against the Rams, but everyone's beating up the Minnesota Vikings for moving on from him and putting all their faith in J.J. McCarthy, and then reports now McCarthy's struggling a bit in training camp. Listen, I was not the biggest fan of McCarthy coming out of Michigan. I thought he was very overrated. The team at Michigan, what he was on, was unbelievable. They won the national championship, but come on. They had two elite running backs. They had the best defense in the nation. Harbaugh coached the hell out of that team. He played well in big spots, but he was not the best. In the last game of the year against Washington, Michael Penix was better than him. In the Alabama game, maybe he was better than Jalen Milroe. I didn't think Miller was good at all in that game. But like every time he stepped on the field against a great team, he was not the better quarterback. But his draft stock flew up, and he's a likable guy. When you hear him in interviews, he seems like a good kid. And the Vikings took him in the top 10 last year. He gets injured, and that's why Sam Darnold plays, and he had the season he had, and here we go. But everyone's beating up now the Minnesota Vikings for not signing Sam Darnold and for playing J.J. McCarthy. And my mentality is, listen, if you draft a kid that high, you got to see if he can play. And the one time we actually saw J.J. McCarthy play in the preseason, he played pretty darn well. And I trust Kevin O'Connell, and I love the moves they made in free agency. They still have Justin Jefferson last time I checked. They still have Addison. They still have a great offensive line. Aaron Jones is there. They brought in, Mason from the 49ers to be another running back. They've got so much talent on that roster. But everyone's getting on him for playing McCarthy. And listen, I understand he's injury prone already, and that's not ideal. But let's pump the brakes here. San Francisco did it with Trey Lance. They had to find out if he can play. They found out rather quickly, and they moved on. Drake May, we have to find out if he can play. You draft the guy, once you realize you're out of it, hey, we got to move on and play. Go through, all these young quarterbacks have played. Bo Nix from that draft played. Drake May played. Caleb Williams, Jaden Daniels, Michael Penix. They all played. This is the only guy who hasn't played from the top 10. And he was rated just as highly as Penix, rated just as highly as Bo Nix and all those other guys. So what would signing Sam Darnold do? Just admitted you were wrong. And how would they know? How would they know? He played one preseason game, which he was awesome, and it actually surprised me, and then he got hurt. So just because he had a bad training camp day, we're just not going to trust Kevin O'Connell. We're not going to trust any of the weapons around him. To me, the Vikings, with me at quarterback, can compete for a playoff spot. With me. So everyone's getting on it. Listen, they weren't. If not, they didn't like Sam Darnold. It's also the Seahawks gave him over $100 million. You have all this money tied up in the Jefferson. You've paid a bunch of guys in free agency already to come over. Not to mention Jordan Addison and all these other guys. That tackle, I don't know if he signed already, Darisaw. But if not, he's going to want a huge deal. They decided, you know what? We picked the guy in the top 10. He's on a rookie deal. How much better or worse is he than Sam Darnold? Not Patrick Mahomes, not Josh Allen. Sam Darnold, who's bouncing around the league like there was no tomorrow, was with the Jets, was with the Panthers, was with the 49ers. He's been all around the league. and we're going to get on Minnesota for moving on from him to play their top 10 draft pick? It makes no sense. And then one video comes out in training camp. Oh, there he is. Oh, look at him. He can't play. Let's calm down. Noah had a bad training camp too. Apparently his first year, Patrick Mahomes. Oh. Josh Allen was a bit erratic. And I don't even like J.J. McCarthy. I wouldn't have picked them where they did. But I understand the reason why they let Darnold go. And we were live on air in March when free agency was hitting and we said it looks like Darnold's out the door and it makes sense. I said it in March and I'm going to say it again here on July 28th. It makes no sense for people to get on the Vikings. Now, you can get on them from drafting McCarthy. I have no problem with doing that. I got them to say, hey, I preferred Penix. But I'm not Kevin O'Connell, and I don't know quarterbacks like Kevin O'Connell, and I'm not an offensive guru like Kevin O'Connell. And based on all the meetings he did last year, based on the combines those quarterbacks had, he preferred J.J. McCarthy. Fair enough. You can get on them for taking him. But you cannot get on them for, at least I don't understand people getting on the Vikings for, trying to play them to see if they made the right choice. It's better to know now than 2 years from now. Okay, you signed Darnold to a three-year deal. Darnold plays a three-year deal. And then you have this kid McCarthy just waiting. We never know if he plays. Bite the bullet. Play him. And if McCarthy stinks, we got a good quarterback class this year, or you can go and trade for one. There's other options. But you can't just waste Justin Jefferson's time, Jordan Addison's time, this defense's time, kicking the can down the road, not sure if this McCarthy kid can play. So I don't understand it. And I bet the people who say you got to keep Darnold, the same people are like, Jesus, they're going to start Sam Darnold this year? I believe in Kevin O'Connell, at least in the regular season. I believe in Brian Flores and that defense, that they get the benefit of the doubt. Now, the Vikings, they're in a brutal division. The Lions are still going to be the team to beat. Green Bay got better. Ben Johnson's gone to Chicago to bring Caleb Williams back to the USC level. Okay, it's going to be interesting. It's going to be a tough division and a tough schedule. I understand it. But people are really beating up on the Minnesota Vikings. They really are. Even if this season goes south for them, you had to know if McCarthy can play. You don't draft a guy that high not to know. And this is not like a Jordan Love situation or an Aaron Rodgers situation or a guy like that. Those guys were late first rounds. Those were projects. J.J. McCarthy was a top 10 pick. Won a national championship at Michigan. Apparently the greatest teammate in the world. They have to know if he can play. So everyone getting on Minnesota, I don't understand. And the other team, I don't get what people are getting just so mad at for, just all over for, is the 49ers. I don't understand it. Are you trying to win now? Why are you trading Deebo Samuel? Oh, you don't want to pay? They're rebuilding. They're retooling. Oh, you gave Brock Purdy all the money? They have to. I don't understand it. I don't understand it. Getting on Minnesota for playing McCarthy, and I don't understand teams or people and media personalities getting on the 49ers for signing Brock Purdy, signing Kittle, signing those guys, saying, oh, you're getting older, and then you have to make some decisions. I'm sorry. You Deebo, they once they signed Ayuk, Deebo had to go. That's how it works. And yes, the Ayuk thing backfired because his knee gave out. Fair enough. But teams, people getting on the 49ers and saying they're not going anywhere this year is crazy to me. They have an easy schedule. They brought in Robert Saleh. That defense is going to be miles better next year. McCaffrey's finally healthy. Kittle's going to be healthy. Ricky Pearsall should be healthy. I don't think he'll get shot before the season starts. Why wouldn't they be optimistic and try and go all in? Now, do I think they're the best team in the NFC? No. But I understand letting Ward go, and I understand letting Deebo Samuel go. Those guys you can replace. They're going to try and replace him with Ricky Pearsall. And nothing against great corners. It's amazing to have great corners. But you can find corners that can play a little bit, unlike a quarterback. And Brock Purdy, people like to beat up on him more than anyone. More than anyone. Just because where he was drafted. And yes, he had great players around him. I'm not saying that he would be this version of Brock Purdy anywhere. but he's a very good quarterback. And you have to pay him. And they didn't overpay him. They didn't give him $67 million a year. Then he got the Trevor Lawrence contract. He got the, what's his name's contract? I'm drawing a blank now. Dak Prescott. He got that level of a contract. Is Trevor Lawrence that much better than Brock Purdy based on his NFL reputation? No. Brock Purdy went to a Super Bowl and an NFC Championship game in his first 2 years. He's done a hell of a lot more than Trevor Lawrence. He's done a hell of a lot more than Dak Prescott. He's done a hell of a lot more than a lot of quarterbacks in the NFL. And that schedule is an absolute joke. The defense is going to be better. Kittle's back. McCaffrey, so when McCaffrey was healthy last year, the Niners were winning ball games. He's healthy. Why wouldn't the 49ers sign their quarterback and try and win and make a run this year? 2 years removed from being in the Super Bowl, in overtime of the Super Bowl. I don't understand it. I don't. People getting on the 49ers, oh, I don't know what you're doing. For me, you got a clean house right now. With that schedule, why? I don't understand. Now, if this year goes completely south and everything's all right, blow it up. But you still got a decent offensive line. You still have a top three running back in football. You still have the best tight end in all football. You still have 2 to 3 very good receivers with Jennings, Pearsall, and Ayuk if he's healthy. You have Robert Saleh, who was the coordinator of a fantastic defense in San Francisco that let him get the New York Jet job. He's coming back, and you can look at the Jets defense compared to when Saleh was there to when he was fired. It went off a cliff. So why wouldn't the Niners sign Brock Purdy? And why wouldn't the Niners extend George Kittle? And why wouldn't the Niners extend Fred Warner? So what? They're older. Their window's now. They've got 1 to 2 years left. And I completely understand it. People getting on San Francisco for that makes no sense to me. And the other and people getting on the Vikings for letting Darnold walk. This is the Sam Darnold who was seeing ghosts in New York, who got benched in Carolina, who barely saw the field in San Francisco. This is the same guy that everyone wanted him to keep. And you draft a guy in the top 10 just waiting to play, and you don't play him. That would be ridiculous. So I'm here to say, lay off on the Vikings and lay off on the 49ers. It makes 100... What they're doing makes perfect sense. It does. So I'm quickly going to give you some teams that I love going into the year. Quickly, before our first break. Or second break, I should say. So, teams that I love going into this year. And I'm not going to pick the typical New England. I'm not going to pick the Raiders. Those are easy teams to pick. Especially the Raiders. They draft Genty. You hire Pete Carroll. You bring in Chip Kelly to call the plays. Geno Smith is miles better than Aiden O'Connell. So I understand the Raiders is an easy one, I understand. The Patriots is an easy one, too, I understand. You bring in Mike Vrabel, Drake May, and Josh McDaniels. They're finally together now. Let's see what happens. They sign Steph Diggs. They spend more money than anyone in free agency. I understand it. But to me, the two teams that are flying under the radar and I think are going to be very good this year, very good this year. I think the Denver Broncos are going to be very good this year. And I'm not even the biggest Bo Nix fan. I like Bo Nix. I wasn't crazy about him in the draft process just because I was just hypnotized from what I saw at Auburn, but he got way better when he went to Oregon, completely changed his game. And Sean Payton, as much as I don't like him, is still one of the great coaches in all football, one of the great offensive mind. They have a top five offensive line. They draft this Harvey kid, the running back. He should have a good year. The skill position players aren't ideal. It's not a Cincinnati level or a Philadelphia level of skill players. But they brought in Evan Ingram, who's going to be a very good tight end for them. Sean Payton loves using the tight ends. And we have to talk about that defense. That defense is outstanding. Outstanding. Pat Surtain, they drafted Jahdae Barron from Texas, who literally won the Thorpe Award last year as the best corner. They still have Riley Moss there. Nick Benito's a fantastic player. They brought in Hufanga. They brought in the other kid, Greenlaw. They're going to have one of the 10 best defenses in all of football. And yes, their schedule in the division's tough because you got to play Kansas City twice, and you got to play the Chargers twice, and you got to play the Raiders twice. But look at the other teams they play. They play Tennessee. Indianapolis, the Jets, the Giants. It's not a Jacksonville. It's just not a tough. It's not a tough schedule outside of their own division. And their own. And that's that division's going to be brutal this year. It really is. You have the Raiders, who we addressed, made all those moves. You have Denver, the Chargers. People are loving them. They brought in Hampton, the first-round pick from North Carolina, the running back. They go and they draft the Harris wide receiver from Ole Miss. Their offensive line is just getting better and better. They extended Rashawn Slater. You have Slater and Alt. They brought in Mekhi Becton, who is going to be one of the great guards in football. Look what we did with the Eagles last year once they kicked him the guard. Their Chargers are going to have one of the great offensive lines, and their defense completely shifted from 2 years ago. That proved how inept Brandon Staley was. The Chargers had all the talent in the world on defense, and they were horrendous with Brandon Staley. And then they bring in Harbaugh, and he brings in Jesse Minter to be defensive coordinator, and it went from the 24th ranked defense to the best. So the Chargers defense is still going to be elite. And then Kansas City are the class of the NFL right now. So that division is tough, but I look at the Broncos, who I won't be rooting for. Not a Sean Payton guy, not a Bo Nix guy, and I just never really gravitate towards the Denver Broncos. Maybe it was because of the Peyton Manning rivalries, the second part of his career. Was never a Jay Cutler guy, was never a Kyle Orton guy. Just never really was a Bronco. I never really liked the Broncos. But I have to give him credit. That defense is going to be for real. That schedule is not that hard. And Sean Payton's a hell of a coach, as much as I despise him. He is. I have to admit it. He is absolutely one of the elite coaches in all football. So I love the Chargers this year, and I love, maybe even more so, based on expectations, the Broncos. I think the Broncos are going to have a fantastic year. And if you look at that AFC, Buffalo's fantastic. The Ravens are fantastic. The Chiefs. Those are the three best teams. Now, you want to put Houston as four, but to me, you can put the Chargers, Houston, Denver in that next tier. The Steelers, we'll see if Aaron Rodgers can play. And Cincinnati, they're like a fantasy team, and then nothing else on offense. Their offensive line is poor. The running back position's okay. They just have two elite wide receivers and an all-world quarterback and the league's worst defense. That's going to get you 9-8. To me, the Broncos are a better team than that. And then New England's an unknown. The Jets stink and the Dolphins stink. So to me, you could have possibly three teams or four teams from the AFC West in the postseason this year. But I'm picking the Broncos to make the playoffs. I'm picking the Chargers to make the playoffs. And I'm damn sure picking Kansas City to make the playoffs. The real question is, will Geno Smith, Pete Carroll, Chip Kelly change life for the Raiders? And will Aston Jente be the impact player that the Raiders hoped he would be? That's what's going to come down to. I'm not buying the Colts. I'm not buying the Jaguars, even though I love Liam Cohen. I think he can win them 7-8 games, but I don't think they'll make the playoffs. And what, Tennessee? Are you nuts? To me, that next class is the Raiders, the Broncos, the Texans, the Chargers, the Broncos. Are the four through seven, eight in the AFC. Then you have New England and those teams, the Raiders, that can maybe get in Jacksonville. And then you have your dumpster fire at the bottom with the Jets and the Dolphins, all those teams. But make no mistake, it is still Kansas City, Buffalo, Baltimore, a little bit of a gap, Houston, Chargers, Broncos. That's it. And I think the Broncos and the Chargers, especially the Chargers, next year, when they have all that money coming off the books, they have Mack and Bosa and all those other guys off the books, they can really do some damage 2 years from now. But give Denver credit. This year, they looked at their roster and said, let's go help Bo Nix, get him a tight end, give him a running back, and let's just make our strength even better, invest in that defense. Trust me, Vance Joseph knows what he's doing. He 1,000% knows what he's doing to the defensive side of the ball, and Sean Payton completely change the narrative on Bo Nix. A year ago, people were like, oh, 12th pick in the draft, are you nuts too? I think Bo Nix can be a Pro Bowl caliber player in 1 year. So as much as I hate him, I think the Denver Broncos are going to be a problem in the AFC. I really do. We're going to take a quick break, and we come back. I'll quickly preview that first week of college football. Unbelievable matchups. You have Ohio State, you have Texas, you have Florida State, Alabama, all in action. It's going to be fantastic. So we'll get into that after this break from the Tommy John Show.
Dive into the ultimate comic haven at Crossover Comics. Unleash your inner geek with the best selection of graphic novels, manga, games like Pokemon and Magic, in-store events, merch, and more. Our knowledgeable and friendly staff have got your back with awesome recommendations for your next read. Score big with a free account. Enjoy comic subscriptions and membership discounts. Be in on the action at 3560 Notre Dame West in St. Henry, right near Metro Lionel Brew. Crossover Comics, sharing your passions since 2012.
Do you want to have a discussion about movies?
Mrs. Robinson, you're trying to seduce me.
And have the iconic sounds of cinema?
And here's to you, Mrs. Robinson. Jesus loves you more than...
We'll tune in to At the Movies with Iconic Sounds every Tuesday from 8 to 9 a.m.
Only on CJLO 1690 a.m. in Montreal with your hosts, Remy
and Danny.
I love the colorful clothes you wear and the way the sunlight plays upon her hair. I hear the sound of a gentle wind on the wind that lifts her perfume through the air.
I'm picking up good vibrations. She's giving me the excitations. I'm backing up.
Back here on the Tommy John Show. So I just see a report now from Adam Schefter. The Bengals and Trey Hendrickson, kept calling him Hutchinson the whole show, but Trey Hendrickson have the framework of a deal in place, but are being held up in the guaranteed money part. So look, there's already on the framework of a deal. Everyone makes these huge deals. I literally went on a rant about it for 20 minutes on this program. What do you think? They're not, their defense was pitiful last year, and they're going to trade their only good player who led the league in sacks? Come on. Come on. So that just proved, I don't want to say I told you so, but like, come on. They're not going to sign Trey Hendrickson. Washington aren't going to sign Terry McLaurin. And every show on ESPN, watch them get traded. No, they're just doing it for viewership. Come on. These owners are worth billions and billions and billions of dollars, made a fortune in another life. They can't be that dumb. They must be smart to a certain degree. All those deals are going to get done, and it looks like we're heading in that direction. They'll get the guaranteed money part done, no problem. So, there you have it. Also, big thing we want to get is mentioned Christian Wilkins. That was a surprise. 1 year after the Raiders gave him that huge deal to bring him over from Miami, he gets released. It's going to be interesting where he signs. He's still a very good player. He obviously is coming off that injury. We'll see how effective he is. But he's a hell of a player, so it'll be interesting to see where he ends up as well. Quickly here, we have 50 seconds. I just saw the schedule for week one of the college football season. My goodness, is that any good? You have Alabama, Florida State, Texas, and Ohio State at noon. Then you have LSU and Clemson, and you have UCLA and Utah. What a start. What a start. And I know technically there's week zero before that. So technically it's not the first week. But Labor Day weekend, August 30th, I'm so juiced. Arch Manning's first start as the number one quarterback starting a year against defending national champions on the road. That game's going to do huge numbers. Cannot wait for that. Thank you for listening to this week's show, The Tommy John Show. We'll be back next Monday right here on CJLO 1690 AM. Thank you guys for listening.
You're listening to C-